While you're clearing your throats, I'd like to start off with one question to James. The use of metaphor by, you mentioned economists, isn't one of the reasons they do it is that the subject is very dry and very boring, and they're attempting to inject some life into something that otherwise other people wouldn't read?
I don't think so. I think when, certainly some do, and certainly when you read headlines are a feast of metaphors. Almost any headline, whether it's about economics or politics or whatever, or sports, lots of sports metaphors, almost every headline is a metaphor. But I think when journalists in general, and financial journalists in particular, use metaphors like soar and plummet and things like that, they are not aware that they're using metaphors. If you look at what is I think one of the most pervasive economic metaphors is that money is a sort of liquid. You know, we talk about solvency, we talk about skimming things off the top. Even the word broker is originally referred to someone who tapped a keg in medieval times, which brokers continue to do to this day. We talk about liquidity, we talk about our stock options are underwater, and there's all these metaphors of fluid dynamics when we talk about money. And I don't think that's because economists or financial journalists are trying to liven up a dry subject. I don't think, there's another metaphor, a dry subject. it's quite an interesting subject. What I think is going on, and I think this is true, this is how metaphor works, is that in trying to explain something new or something that's abstract, like money is very, very abstract, especially today, we look for something that everybody is familiar with to explain it, because it's so immaterial that otherwise we can't grasp it, which is another metaphor. Sorry, I'll stop saying that now. Water is a good metaphor for the way that money works. So, and metaphor is much more, it's a way of thought long before it's a way with words. So when we're trying to explain something, and which journalists are trying to do every day, we look for the thing that everybody is already familiar with to explain this new thing. And so water seems to be a good way to describe money, because money kind of flows around and it goes into one pot and then it comes into another pot, and very often it completely evaporates and we aren't quite sure why. So I think people instinctively and immediately find the thing that's in the natural world or that's common to lots of people's experience, and they use that to describe this new thing. And the more successful, the more accurately they can do that, the more successful the metaphor becomes, and then it becomes popular, and suddenly we all start talking about it, and we don't even think it's a metaphor anymore.
Something like water, you instantly see, whereas money, I mean, it is obviously visual, but you see the green notes. You know, the water and most metaphors give you a visual dimension as well, and that's probably why they're so effective.
You're absolutely right. In fact, I see what you mean. One of the metaphors that is present in absolutely every culture, in every language, all around the world since the beginning of time, is the metaphor of understanding as vision. I see what you mean. And if you think about the metaphors we use all the time, they are visual, because most of our information about the world comes through our sense of vision. That's how we understand most things. And metaphor evolved from, you know, if you talk about how metaphor works in the brain, it evolved from the same kind of brain circuitry that we use to navigate the physical world, has been sort of co-opted to navigate the emotional and psychological world through metaphor. And that's why these metaphors are always so physical.
Can we identify yourself, please, Paul?
Please call her. Lucy Beresford. I'm a novelist and writer, but I'm also a psychotherapist. And there was some research recently about the way that our personal use of language, to pick up on your phrase, frames our reference to the world. And they were looking at clinical studies of patients with cancer, and they studied the language that these patients used about themselves, about their vision for recovery. patients who spoke metaphorically of, I feel like death, you know, I'm feeling so low, all those sorts of things, they actually had lower outcome scores than patients who had a much more positive outlook on life, which was then transmitted through their language. So very similar ideas.
That's absolutely true. And there's an entire chapter on metaphor and psychology in the book. And there's a brand of therapy called clean language, which works with metaphors. And I did one of these sessions as part of the research for the book. And essentially, you go in with an issue or a subject that you wish to discuss, and the therapist says, "And what is it like?" And you have to come up with a metaphor. Well, it's like, and I used...
That's a simile.
Ah, thank you very much. That is a simile. But a simile is just a metaphor with the scaffolding still up. So just to respond to that point, when I say metaphor, I mean metaphorical thinking. So I mean similes, I mean analogies, I mean scientific thought experiments. The way the mind works by association. Metaphor is not just, you know, my love is like a red, red rose, because that's a simile, obviously. But Juliet is the sun. That's a metaphor. But so is the way we think. It's metaphorical thinking that I'm talking about.